And I got all the different drama schools writing letters saying, we really want Margaret. You please give her a grant. And he just wouldn't. But then I had a word with him and he said, okay, prove to me, go to East 15. And if you get in there, I'll consider giving you a grant. When I got there, there was a lot of us auditioning and it was a very different sort of drama school. And we were told, there's nowhere for you to live. You'll have to camp out in the garden. Which was like, what?
Oh.
Anyway, when I was there, I met another auditionee and he said he was auditioning at Manchester Poly School of Theatre the next week and I should try my luck there. And so as soon as I got home, back up to Newcastle, I contacted them and they had an audition the next week on the Thursday. So I went off down to Manchester again and did my audition. This is all hundreds and hundreds of miles going to places. And you had to pay every time you auditioned. So I auditioned there, there was lots of us there. This was just before the term was due to start. Mm-hmm. And by the time I got home, I'd been told I'd got a place to start on the Monday. This was Thursday night, I was starting on the Monday.
So-
So, hey everyone, I am Ajay Tambe, host and producer of Create Your Year Starting Podcast. And today with me, I have a very talented and multi-award-winning voice actress, Margaret Ashley. She is based in UK and she was part of our recent project, The Knights of Avalon. Welcome to the show, Margaret Ashley.
Hi.
How are you doing?
I'm fine. I've got different weather to you over there. We're in the UK where we've got winter Arctic weather. So it's a bit chilly.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's for me, yeah, it's 26, 27. That's the thing for us. But I am, you know, connecting with a lot of people from UK, from Canada also, from Calgary, from a lot of different weather. There's in the minus, that's like minus 20, minus 10. You are at least in positive, right? The temperature is positive 4, 5, 6, I guess, for you. Okay. Things are going good. And what's going on with you on artistic point of view? What's the schedule for today?
Today I've got several auditions to do for various things, both for voiceover and acting. So the difference is voiceover auditions are very simple. I go into my studio and I record them. But for acting, sometimes I have to do a self-tape. So I have to set up a camera and learn a script and then perform the script and then send it off to the casting directors.
Oh, yeah, I get it. So you have a studio nearby you where you do all the auditions for them, right?
I've got my own voiceover studio. In this very room, it's just over there.
Okay, that's awesome. So how do you like this? I guess I read it on your website where you mentioned you do a Zoom call where they guide you. I guess there's a kind of direction happening or you just do the checking things.
It very much depends. Some I just self-direct. I'm sent the script and a description of the character or what they want. It could be like a 30-second commercial and they will give you a breakdown whether they want it cheery or solemn or however they want it, and then I record it. Or if it's something that they want to be involved in, then we can connect remotely, either via clean feed or sometimes Zoom or Session Link Pro or whatever it is they want to connect with.
Got it. It sounds really good, you know. I read it on your website, and that's where I came to know you have a studio of your own. And I thought it's somewhere else outside, but it's it's near you. So that's the thing. I've seen... Yeah.
If like for some of the games I do, I have to go up to studios in London. That's a bit of a journey. It's like an hour and a half to get up there. And then you have to make sure you're there in plenty of time. You're not late because studio time is expensive.
It's like seconds.
You don't want to keep anybody waiting. So.
It's like seconds. They're counting the seconds or the cents. That's the business. But yeah, and it's lovely to hear your voice in some of the games, you know, they are mentioned in your website. So I went to your website. You've done a lot of films, a lot of voiceovers. You won a lot of awards throughout your journey and you're still doing a lot of work. But here's the thing. Before we talk more about your awards and the projects that you did, the memorable projects that you did and the films that you did, I'd like to jump back to you as the one who is in school and who just got to know about acting or something related to that. Can we switch back to the moment where, you know, that's where you got introduced to acting or drama or play? What was that, Margaret?
There wasn't a moment. I mean, when I was a child, a very long time ago, things were quite different. We only had two TV channels. We had the BBC and ITV, and that was it. And we didn't have it all day, 24 hours. We literally had it for certain amounts of time. And as a child, we were only allowed to watch certain programs. So the thing that really got me interested in acting, I suppose, was on a Saturday afternoon was the Saturday matinee, where they would show all the Hollywood, well, we call them blockbusters now, but they were the Hollywood movies. And I'd go to the cinema. And I remember a couple of very big films I was taken to see at the cinema with my parents. The first one was The Sound of Music with Julie Andrews. And I remember standing in a very big long queue waiting to watch that. And another one we saw when I was on holiday, and it was a treat to go to the cinema. It wasn't something you did all the time. Occasionally you go Saturday mornings, but it was a big treat to go as a family to the cinema. And so I saw Gregory Peck in To Kill a Mockingbird. And that had a big impression on me. But the thing that I suppose made me feel I wanted to be an actress was those Saturday afternoons sitting on the sofa watching all these films, thinking, I'd like to do that. But as a little girl growing up in the northeast of England, it's not the sort of thing that one did. But it was always there inside. It was something I wanted to do. And I don't remember being in a school play. I might have been a fairy or a star or something in a school nativity.
Okay.
But we didn't do drama at school. And it was when I was about 14 or 15, I think, I decided I really do want to do acting. And we didn't have the internet.
Okay.
So you couldn't find things
on the internet. Yeah. I get it.
So I searched around and found a youth club that did amateur dramatics. And I joined it. And somehow I got cast. We did, we were all teenagers, and we did The Boyfriend, and I played Hortense, the French maid, ooh la la. Ooh, and that made quite an impression on a chap who had his son in the show. Mm-hmm. He belonged to an adult amateur dramatic group, and he then directed the next show we did, which was Me and My Girl, and I played Madame Dubonnet. I did Madame Dubonnet, and which was a middle-aged character and very strict. But he then invited his amateur dramatic group to come and see it, and obviously we were all teenagers, and there I was playing a middle-aged woman. And the director of his amateur dramatic group was an ex-drama teacher, and she singled me out and spoke to me and said, I want you to come and join our adult group. I know you're not old enough, but I want you to come and join. So I did. And she cast me in a couple of things and said, you have got real talent. You need to go to drama school. And that was something that I really wanted to do, but I didn't know how to go about it.
Yeah.
So she told me how to do it, how to apply to all the different drama schools, to find out what auditions they wanted, what their priorities were. And I got applications from all the different drama schools, and all of them were different auditions. And she coached me privately to do these auditions. And I got into every single drama school.
What?
Including RADA, including Central. However,
so you were now in the position to choose.
Well,
right?
Yes, except I wasn't, because to go to drama school, you had to have a grant from your local council. And my local council didn't really approve of that sort of thing, or the person that was in charge of the grants didn't approve of it. And so he wouldn't give me a grant. And I got all the different drama schools writing letters saying, we really want Margaret. You please give her a grant. And he just wouldn't. But then I had a word with him, and he said, okay, prove to me, go to East 15. And if you get in there, I'll consider giving you a grant.
What's East 15?
I'd never heard of it. At the time, it was a very unusual drama school. It wasn't in the centre of London like most of them were. It was out in Essex, which was quite a journey for me to get to from the northeast of England right down to through London and then out to the other side. Anyway, when I got there was a lot of us auditioning, and it was a very different sort of drama school. And we were told, there's nowhere for you to live. You'll have to camp out in the garden, which was like, what?
Oh.
Anyway, when I was there, I met another auditionee, and he said he was auditioning at Manchester Poly School of Theatre the next week, and I should try my luck there. And so as soon as I got home, back up to Newcastle, I contacted them, and they had an audition the next week. On the Thursday, so I went off down to Manchester again and did my audition. This is all hundreds and hundreds of miles going to places. And you had to pay every time you auditioned. So I auditioned there. There was lots of us there. And this was just before the term was due to start. Okay. And by the time I got home, I'd been told I'd got a place to start on the Monday. This was Thursday night. I was starting on the Monday. So I literally just, and now Manchester Polytechnic was an educational establishment. So it was mandatory. I got a grant.
Yeah.
Wow. And it was to start the next week. So I packed a bag. I accepted, packed a bag, went off to Manchester, nowhere to live, didn't know anybody, literally just a little bag, and arrived at the drama school. And there were several of us had nowhere to live. And I ended up, thankfully, staying on the floor of one of the students' bed sits. It was literally, she had a bed, and then there was that much room on the floor, and then the tiny kitchen, which was basically a cupboard. And I stayed with her for a few weeks. And slept on the floor, and then I slept on somebody else's sofa, and I eventually found a bedsit of my own. But that was it. I started at Manchester Polytechnic, which was probably the best place for me to go, and graduated from there 3 years later.
This is complete. I never was expecting this kind of answer from you.
What were you expecting?
I was just expecting, like, you know, usually I interview guests and they tell me, hey, I was in school and this led to this. This is next, what kind of, like, this is a really, really cool story. This is the first time I've ever heard someone.
It was a long, hard story.
Like, yep. You were like, you know, caught, selected in fourth, and this is the grant that I'm hearing for the first time. Like, you need a grant, and that's when, and that's only when you can get to in the drama school.
This and was then, 40 years ago.
Yeah, 40 years ago. Now it's a completely different thing, and then you hustle it out. You just went on to places, and it's like traveling 40 years back. It's like traveling to one place. It's like miles away, you know, and you're telling me, like, every time you have to pay for that. Wow, this is, I mean, like, after whole process, you got into one drama school that was actually legitimate, where you don't have to, you know, ask for permission. There's a grant already.
But now it did take a long time for the grant to come. Hence, I was sleeping on people's floors because I couldn't afford to pay rent.
Yeah. I mean, like, you did a lot of struggle even to start into this field, you know, just to start, just to get started, just to know what's there, what's the thing that's keeping me awake in the night. Like, this is something else. I want to do it. And that's keep you, like, that's the one thing that keeps you going.
The passion and desire. It's what I wanted to do. And I had an opportunity. Somebody believed in me and was pushing me. And you have to grab opportunities as they come along.
Wow, this is the first time I've ever heard, like, 40 years back, this kind of passion. I mean, that shows, like, what kind of discipline that you have today for this work and what kind of work that you've did in voiceover industry, you know, just pivoting yourself other than acting. You did a lot of work, and also that's commendable. You've won a lot of awards today, and that really shows how it happened. What was the story behind it? Just the beginning of that beginning. Wow. And now there was, like, I had 4 or 5 questions. You just completely you just shifted the whole point of me, you know, okay, there's no inspiration. Like, this is completely different. Now you're telling me, like, those two TV shows that iPlayer and BBC, that's where the whole thing used to come up, you know, the particular cinema that you watched, but that was like limited exposure to the media that you had in those days. Like, only 4 or 5 hours, I guess, throughout the day. That's where you get to know the cable and whatever you had that time. But were there any particular, like, characters or, you know, particular movie that was sticking with you throughout your journey, you know, just still that? Well, we all have that. Yeah, go on.
Strangely enough, there was an actress called Patricia Coombs, or Patty Coombs, and she used to appear in just about everything. Any comedy series, she'd be there. She was the stooge, or she was a small part player. But she was always working, and she wasn't a star. She wasn't a sort of a glamorous siren. She was just a very ordinary sort of woman who, she was from London. She talked a bit like that, but she was in everything. And my idea was to be a new young Patty Coombe, that I would appear in every television show. I might not be a star, but I would be working all the time, and I'd be playing different characters. It never really happened, but that was the idea. Yeah. Patty Coombs and Kathleen Harrison were always working, and at that time, 40 years ago, seemed to be in everything.
Wow. I mean, like, we do have that kind of thing, but I was like, you know, just thinking of, okay, she went through a lot. there must be something that made her kept going, you know, that feeling of, okay, this is the moment that I also want to have. Like, okay, I got it. You want to play. But now you're doing, I guess, in the voiceover business, you're doing that kind of role, as you know, you're doing corporate videos, you're doing video games, you're doing, you know, narration to the big audio stories, you're doing audio dramas, all kind of thing. And I guess that's where you're playing your, you know, your character that you imagine you'd be doing. But yeah. in a very different way.
As a voice actor. People don't know what you look like, so they just hear the voice. Yeah. So you can be anything, anybody. Yeah. I've been a mushroom. I've been a dragon. I've been a child. Yeah. And I've been an 800-year-old siren.
Oh, yeah. We enjoyed you completely, you know, in Knights of Avalon. It was really great. Like, the reviews dropped in the next day. And the moment I was editing, I never had to, you know, move any edit settings for you. And your voice, I just was enjoying while I was editing and adding the sound effects. So that was really great. Yeah, I really enjoyed it. And after that, I added one more scene. You know, that was not written in the script, but just focusing on the characters were talking before the climax. I added one scene where they enters into. I guess you don't remember once you. It's at the end before you finish the story, where they're the characters' voiceovers. That there were different characters doing. Yeah, those guys. I added, that's why after your voice, you know, it led to something. When I was going through that story journey, it led me to something. Okay, again, I had a small piece of these characters talking, and then Margaret could end the large piece. So that's where I edited it. But yeah, that's why how I got into this thing. Okay, this was great. Now, Nosh, can you share an experience where you felt you had truly found your voice or style as an actor? Like, was there any moment where, you know, it clicked? I get it. I'm this. Okay, this is my graph. This is me. Or this is where, you know, you're getting it. You can crack the script. You can crack the graph. You can crack the settings of that drama. That's where, you know, you're nailing. Oh my God, you're nailing that kind of feeling.
I don't think there ever was. Because as I mentioned, when I was a teenager and I was always cast as the older character role.
I mean, not in teenage phase. Now we are moving on to where you were, you know, graduated. And after you're looking for work, that's the phase where, you know, searching for work, but you started, you know, grabbing up and, you know, eventually started getting with that phase.
Do you mean when I thought I truly made it?
Yeah, I mean, like, for example, you graduated after the school. Now we are moving on to the years.
Well, I moved straight out of drama school into a job, and I was touring, again, being cast as the older character.
Okay.
But while I was there, I was discovered by a couple of audio producers separately, and they introduced me to radio commercials. And so I used to go into their studios and do radio commercial voiceovers, literally just like that. They'd be done in a couple of minutes, and then I'd be on the radio. Wow. So that was something I could actually do radio. Although when I was at drama school, I was taught radio, and I was entered for the Carlton Hobbs Award, which is a big BBC competition thing here.
Okay.
So I knew how to cope in a radio studio and a recording studio. But that was an eye-opener. I could do radio commercials.
Wow. So it happened after?
It was a closed shop at the time.
Yeah.
So although I could do voiceovers up in the north, once I moved down to London, it was a closed shop and I couldn't do voiceovers because there were about five or six celebrity names that got all the voiceover work.
Oh.
As regards to, was there a turning point in my acting career? When I thought I knew I'd made it, well, I was thrilled to get my first job touring. And then I got within months, I got my first BBC job, and again, playing a really old character. But the time I thought I've really arrived is when I was cast in the longest running TV series in the UK, Coronation Street. And so to appear in Coronation Street, that had been one of my dreams. And I was there. I was in Coronation Street.
Yeah.
And I'd love to go back. It's over 30 years since I was last in Coronation Street. But that was the big turning point for me.
That's where you realize you are in the game now.
Yeah.
You're in the big league and you are going to, you know, make it there for a very long time.
One could hope.
So you're saying that the moment you ended the graduation thing completed, you got a job. So voiceover thing was never a thing that you switched. It was there for you. You got like parallel things, you know, both the things were happening to you, right?
No, when I went to drama school, my idea was to be an actress on the stage and television. But I was very lucky in the drama school I was at that they had an AV department. So we were taught how to behave and work in front of a camera, and also how to behave and how to use the equipment and how to turn paper carefully in a radio studio. And as I say, I was entered into the Carlton Hobbs Award. So I knew how to behave in a recording studio. So I was very mm-hmm. lucky there. But it was my idea that I would just act in theatre and television. And if yeah. I was lucky enough to get in audio drama, great. So voiceover wasn't really a thing because there wasn't really commercial radio then. It was just starting up. So when I was touring and then I was discovered by these two audio producers, mm-hmm. Metro Radio, which was the big independent radio station, was just starting. I was unusual. Beginning. That was starting up in Newcastle upon Tyne, where I came from, in the Northeast, and happened to be mm-hmm. where I was working, the theatre. But these two audio producers couldn't believe they discovered me because I was speaking in an RP accent. I was speaking naturally, as opposed to speaking in a native Geordie accent, which is what most of the actors up there had. So they had somebody that could do all different types of commercials.
Yeah, you were for them. Well, she's ready. You need to hire her. Get her on board. That's the thing.
I mean, they were brilliant. Yeah. They literally picked me up in my lunch hour. They'd phone and say, "Are you free? We've got a commercial need." And they picked me up in my lunch hour, drive me to their studio, put a sandwich in my hand as we were going, go into the studio, quickly record the radio ad. And then as I was leaving, they'd give me a check or cash and take me back to work. I would have loved that to continue.
Yeah.
When my theatre job finished, I had to get work again and go down to London.
Yeah. Okay. You really had a great journey. You know, you started when this radio industry never existed. Like it was just, radio was just starting out, you know,
radio, independent. It wasn't that long ago. Radio started
in the early 1900s. No. I mean, like business point of view, where, you know, radio, the commercials, like where, you know, on the go, you are having things, you know, it's like people are applying. That was not the case on the major level for you. You know, people around you or people who are, you know, applying for the theater and the, what we say, films were the major flex for the people as compared to radio. Radio was just, you know, it was there, but it was never the
radio
flex for any artist. It was not a flex for, hey, I can be on radio. It was not that. It was just, there are people who are doing it. That's the thing. Okay, that's what I meant. Okay, good, got it. Okay, you're completely changing my question here.
Sorry.
I don't know what to ask, you know. But here's the thing. I'd like to, now we focus specifically as you got introduced as a voiceover artist. When we talked and we connected, I came to know about you via your website. So my question here is, how do you approach to prepare different voiceover work? From commercials to audio dramas, you know, there's corporate video, then there is a video game video, then there is an audio drama, then there is a character that you're playing. How do you prepare for anything that comes to you? You know, the script just comes to you via mail or via a fax, or I don't know, via post.
We don't have fax anymore.
Yeah. But I don't know. It's like it's in UK. That's why. But you get script, for example. What's your process?
It very much depends on what it is, whether it's an audio drama or a commercial. I mean, there is different techniques for different styles, which is where training comes in. I've trained as an actress and I've been continuous training throughout my career. And so you know how to do these things through your training. Yeah. The script will tell you, hopefully the script will tell you.
and the directors, creative directors.
Often you will get descriptions of, say, for example, it's an audio drama. You will have a description of what the character is like, but you will also have to read through the entire audio drama to see who you're working with, who the characters are that you're working with, and how you will react to them. And by doing that, you will then get an idea of a character in your head and what they sound like. So that then, I mean, again, it's different ways of doing audio drama today. You don't necessarily go into a studio and work with people. You still do. Yeah. But again, a lot of the audio drama I do, I'm sent the script and given my lines. And having read through the script, I then know how to react to the other characters. And I just record my lines and then send them off.
That's a new way of, you know, editing stuff and more advanced studios and, you know, tools and softwares are now came into action. So it's very easy to get it produced. Before it was go to studio, spending a lot of money on that, you know, that there's no that kind of hassle now. But I love the way you approach for the projects. Is there any exercise or anything that you do as a ritual or, you know, something that you follow before going for a project or on regular basis because you're really professional? So what's your exercise related? Is there anything
Well, every voice actor and actor, but a voice actor in particular, will know that they have to warm up before they start. You also have to drink lots of water. The thing about voiceover is your voice picks, the microphone picks up everything. So if I'm doing a recording for a studio or even in my own studio, I drink a lot of water over 24 hours. You do have to stay hydrated because the microphone will pick up a tiny little tongue click and it can sound really irritating. So you have to keep hydrated. So obviously I hydrate all the time. I exercise each day. But just before a session, I do a warm up, whether it's a physical warm up, which is just a very quick sort of roll down and roll up again. But I do my daily walk every day. I do a couple of miles walking every day, which keeps me fit. But then there is a vocal warm up, which every actor has. And there is things called lip trills. And I'll do that on a note, sort of the scales.
Okay.
So that you are getting your lips warmed up. There are other sort of things like tongue twisters. How much wood could a woodchuck chuck if woodchuck could chuck wood? As much good wood as a woodchuck could chuck if woodchuck could chuck wood. And you say that several times over, or any other number of tongue twisters you have, to keep just to get your lips and your tongue and your mouth muscles working. There are just a couple of the little things I do.
Wow, this is incredible. You know, in this, like within 1 minute, I was just, you know, in the next zone of, wow, this is next level process. This is good. That, and I guess every professional voice actor follows this kind of exercises on a regular basis. Yeah, sure. But yeah, this is like, from you, what I see is this is the basic thing that everyone needs to follow before approaching for any kind of project. And I guess professional ones too, someone like you, do this on a regular basis. Like hydrating, that's really good discipline that you have. You know, this is the discipline that needs a next level mindset. You take care of that project like a child. It means like that. You make sure that, okay, comes to me.
Your voice is your instrument. It's like a violin. You have to take care of your violin. You have to take care of your vocal cords.
Yeah. I get it. And this is really a beautiful part about you that you do. And now here's the thing. Your role in the audio drama, The Hunting Ground, with Colin Baker Sounds, was fascinating. Now, what was the experience while doing the whole process of that project?
Well, it sounds fascinating to other people. It's like everyone thinks the acting profession and voiceover is a very glamorous profession.
Yeah.
It's a job. It was how I got The Hunting Ground. A director I knew sent me an email. I happened to be on holiday at the time and asked me if I'd like to take part in this particular program. And when I looked at it, I saw it was Doctor Who. The big Finnish production of Doctor Who, which is a huge thing.
I know that.
There are so many different audio dramas of Doctor Who with all the different doctors.
Yeah.
I was working with Colin Baker, who was the sixth doctor. And so I got the script sent to me on holiday. So I spent my holiday looking through the script. So I was aware of what my character was. I was actually a police inspector, a senior police inspector in, I think it was Iceland. Or an Icelandic type country. And I was given a date to turn up at the studio, which I did, which was over in West London. And I arrived at the studio with the director at the same time. And it's not a glamorous place. It was an underground studio. It was like a tunnel, which led out to a backyard. And
kind of experience that you had.
The thing with audio dramas is they are not done like a story. You start at the beginning and you go all the way through. You do different scenes at different times.
And so it was kind of like a movie also. You know,
like there was a lot of sitting scenes. About, except they tend to get done within a day or two. I arrived with the director and met the cast who were there and waited and finally went in and did one of my scenes, which was in a little studio on my own. Now, this particular studio was quite a big studio. It had lots of individual booths. And so I wasn't working next to somebody on the same mic, but I could see them. Colin was over there. Richard was over there. Somebody else was over there. It was about seven booths within this studio. And then, of course, there was the engineer outside and the director. And so we just recorded the bits that needed recording. I reacted to the people that we needed to react to.
Yeah.
often we're, well, just before this scene, this is what was happening. So this is what's happening now. Mm-hmm. So we're directed by the director, what was happening. And then one of the best bits about it was the owner of the studio and the engineer was a brilliant mm-hmm. cook, and he cooked us lunch, which was absolutely fantastic. I mean, the food was amazing, and we made all the actors very happy. And then we went back in and did the rest of the scenes. And so it was just like any other job. We did recorded the scenes and then went home. And then eventually the cassette came out, and I was sent a copy of it, and it's available for people to buy from Big Finish Productions and the BBC.
I mean,
but
this
that, again, that was a good thing for my good string to my bow. Oh, Margaret's been in a BBC Big Finish production on Doctor Who. So that was tick box.
That's a big flex for that particular period, you know, Doctor Who, and that's a good kind of flex every artist is looking for, being in Doctor Who. Okay, and this I guess that studio, I really was imagining the way you were describing that studio, underground studio, then there's different booths. This is the first time I'm hearing about any particular studio having separate booths, you know, a lot of
so that's the way it having... used to be. The BBC used to have an underground studio, and there were lots of different studios underground because it's quiet.
Yeah, and the sound, the way it can be delivered in proper way, I guess that means that that's the instrument and arrangement that they had at that particular point. And it's really creative doing something in underground. Wow. Now here's the thing about film and voiceover. You can choose, or you can tell both of them. Is like, were there any unexpected opportunities or roles that took your career in a new direction? Now, you just mentioned something related to Doctor Who, but in both these fields, voiceover and film, were there some particular project that you think, okay, this really took me to the next direction? You know, this really changed my game, increased my belief, or there was increase in percentage. Okay, this is it. This is where I guess this project really changed my life. Were there any of both or any one that you can share?
I don't think there was a project that changed my life, but I was not at the beginning of my career. I had a couple of agents and I was not very happy with the way things were going. I wasn't getting the work that I wanted, and various things happened which I wasn't happy about. And so I decided to set up my own acting agency. And so I set up an agency so that I could find out where the work was and who was casting it and put myself forward for it. So I had about 25 clients that I looked after, and it was supposed to be a cooperative agency, but I ended up running it most of the time because I had the experience. I knew how to negotiate. I knew the casting directors. And it turned out that the casting directors, whenever they phoned up wanting to employ an actor, wanted to speak to me because they felt confidence in me. So I ended up being an agent for a while.
Wow, that's cool. That 25 agent. You were in the client servicing. That's why you are very easygoing, you know. That's why you are very easygoing to, you know, communicate, you know, talk and share things around, because people who are in client servicing know this kind of loopholes in this, like, okay, someone is going to react in this way, and you need to be ready to, you know, serve them because you get different kind of clients, you know, 25 clients, 25 different behaviors. And I guess that's where I guess you actually starting an agency, which means that's why I guess we never had different kind of, we communicated within 5-10 minutes that throughout that project. And you're really easygoing because of this, I guess. Is this an agency still working? Or
no, it ran. It survived for 25 years. Okay. I didn't run it for 25 years. I ran it for a couple of years. And then I got married and had children. And I couldn't very well have a baby. So we sold it on and other people looked after it. But it ran for 25 years. So it had a solid foundation. And sadly, it's not going anymore. But actors that I looked after did quite well.
Wow. That's good. This is really good initiative that you took. I mean, like, this is a new creative way to, you know, be around casting directors, start agency, and then, you know, be around those people you are looking to be, like, looking for you. And that's how, I guess, a lot of things happen for you. But this is the first time I have heard, like, any actor starting an agency or any artist starting an agency. Here's the thing. Now, you've won a lot of awards. First of all, congratulations. Okay, for all the awards that you won. I'm going to read the names. Vox Awards winner, One Voice Awards, SOWAS Awards, then there's Independent Film, Independent Award for some film which is on produced by an independent filmmaker. I guess you won an award for that too. It's mentioned on your website. But importantly, there's a Vox Award, there's One Voice, and there's SOWAS. So And there's, I guess, Diamond Award for Dancing Yeti series for your narration as Heidi, right?
No. No? This was the Dancing Yeti meets Heidi, and I played Frieda Fortescue, the terribly British hunter.
I guess yesterday the message got combined and I miscorrected. Like it was there, but then I corrected it and then this misplacement happened. But okay, thank you for correcting me. But the whole point was congratulations for winning all those awards. And this is really, you know, someone who is winning awards at the same time, keeping the same pace. What winning awards means to you, because you're winning from consistently from 2021 now. I guess, Vox Awards. There's 2023, I guess, 2020 updated on your website. Now in today, 2024, I mean, like in this years where you're continuously winning, in what percentage or in what way these awards have a place in your whole life, the recognition part, and also somewhere, how does it matter to you? Like in what percentage now it matters to you, because now you are at that stage where you are happy of who you are throughout. You know, so that's where how much it matters and in what way it matters for winning best voice of artist 2023 or 2021, 2022.
Well, it matters because it's recognition that the people, and the people didn't know who I was. They just heard the voice and they heard whatever the production was, thought you were very good, that you were the best at what you did. And it then gives me a sense of I am. Anybody who sees, she is professional. She's someone I can trust. She will do a good job.
Oh, yeah.
But it's more the appreciation that people appreciate the work that you have done and that it is good. Because I know I try and I strive to do the best I possibly can in everything. Yeah. And I would hope people like it. And I seem to get recognition from people that, that yes, you are good at what you do. And we like what you do because you see my reviewers, et cetera. And people are always happy with what you give them. Yeah. But the recognition of having been an award winner puts you up. Peter Dixon, who is one of the biggest voiceovers in the industry, I don't know if you've heard of the X Factor.
I have no idea at this moment.
It's a thing called the X Factor, which is very big in the UK, and he is the voice of the X Factor. It's a big voice he does, and everybody knows it.
He's one of the
organizers of the Vox Awards and the One Voice Awards.
Okay,
and
he's organizing.
If you are a winner of an award, then you are in the top 4% of the entire industry of voiceovers. So I'm in the top 4% of voiceovers in
that's good. Okay, it ups your game. First of all, what I can see, it ups your game in this industry. Second of all, it puts your name in the major like agents' phone pages, you know, where they can contact. They're looking for someone and then they just have your number in 1, 2, 3 numbers, like they are going to call you. That's the whole thing. And the third thing I see is it really gives you new clients, and the clients can immediately contact you and get in touch with you and sign you up. Because when I see on your website, it's mentioned in very particular and very good way that that trust factor and the credibility factor, I guess, more credibility that you have, it shows and it immediately attracts, like, hey, I want her on board. That's the thing. I guess that's where it really helps you, you know, as a voice artist. And you are in the top 4%, I guess, according to the report. But yeah, I guess that's where it really puts you in the top list of having you on the, you know, your dream project, where people are looking for the voice and your number is in that shortlisted 4 or 5 things. I guess that's where these awards are going to lead you. It's going to happen. I mean, you're incredible. The moment I type Margaret Ashley on Google, I can see your review page. And the moment I read reviews, it's like, hey, she needs to be there in any project that anyone is going to produce in your field. Okay, that's the thing what I can say. Okay, now here's the thing. I guess you started professionally. I just want to know, was it 40 years ago you started, or was it less number of years?
It was very late 70s I graduated.
Okay, late 70s. I mean, like, what we can say, 30, 35 years from now?
Plus.
Okay. Yeah, 35 years plus in this industry.
It's 40. It's definitely 40.
Okay. Let's say 40. Let's say 40 years in this industry. You have seen there's a drastic change in the industry. right from the production, right to the, you know, small things that existed now are very professional and very up to mark. At the same time, there's technology that really changed the whole industry. You know, there's a lot of jobs changed and there's new job added up. There's a lot of technology technicians into the business, but now there are more softwares also with 2024 now in the running. From last 4 or 5 years, there's a lot of things that's upgraded. You've seen everything. You've seen the things changing because you're in the business, not because you are just there. You are in the business, and person who is in the business sees, hey, this year this changed. Then in the 5 years, this thing's changed. So tell me, how do you think the voice or acting industry has changed since you began? And what do you think the future holds for it?
Well, it's changed because most voiceovers now have their own home studios. Yeah. It used to be that you had to go into a studio and record there, but now the majority of voiceovers have their own professional home studio. So it's expensive because you have to fork out for all these things, like an expensive microphone, a studio, all the equipment that you need. You need to learn how to engineer. That was one of the biggest eye openers for me. To suddenly, I mean, I wasn't brought up on computers. I had to get my daughter to teach me how to do it. I mean, I'd sent her to school and she learned all of this at school, but I had to get her to teach me how to operate a computer and how to.
That's edit, whole different thing.
Yeah, and how to edit a track. Okay. I was like, oh, what have I done? What have I done? No, it's okay. You can go back. It doesn't matter. You can, this is a 14-year-old girl teaching her mother how to use.
I started like this, you know. I started in this field with firstly by using this all equipments that are available now. And that's where I started in tracks. And like the way you started after, this is how I was born, I guess, in this field. Yeah. This is what new people are born with now. And they're equipped with the materials and the softwares that they got. But yeah, I get. And now, what do you think the future will be for voice awareness?
Yeah, that is the biggest thing. I mean, for me, hopefully it will stay pretty much the same. Mm-hmm. But there, obviously, you've heard of it. The big threat is AI.
Yeah,
and that's true. And as a voiceover, we have to be very careful what we accept, what contracts we accept, and what our voice is going to be used for. Because if somebody clones your voice, or you do a thing called text to speech, your voice can then be used for all sorts of things. So we have to have contracts written to make sure that it's not possible. That's why there was the strike in America, the SAG-AFTRA strike.
Yes, SAG-AFTRA,
because of the AI problem. And I think that is going to be the biggest thing in voiceover in years to come. And it's happened very, very quickly. It's come upon us very quickly.
Yeah.
And it is taking certain jobs, but there is nothing that can beat the human voice. True. The human voice picks up everything. You can give intonation. I mean, an AI, a robot can try, but there are so many different things that the human voice and a person can do that AI can't. And you can tell, no matter how good they get, you can always tell a real human voice.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But there's one more thing that's happening. There's one more part where actually actors, voice actors are, you know, putting their voice to an AI softwares where we have it. And then they get, you know, what we say, royalties of their voice. That's where they start earning for it. Because there's very few who are earning like you are, you know, where the main business comes from it. But there's a lot of voice artists where they just give their voice to a AI device and then they get royalties for the moment, the words and the characters they use. So what's your take on that? Just want to know what do you think of that?
There are a couple of companies that are doing that you can sell your voice
and
then get paid when people want to use it. But again, it's something that's very new. I was approached for it and I wasn't sure about it. I spoke to a couple of big voice actors in America who were doing it, and they said they think it's okay, but only time will tell. But it's still in the very infancy stage. And yes, they can. I mean, it's like you see these fake videos of bringing actors back to life and using their voice, like Frank Sinatra, using an AI.
It's happening. It's happening.
It's not.
It's new for you, I guess. Yeah, I get it.
I'd rather have new stuff, new work coming up with actors performing that work, rather than because then everything is going to just turn like that. But you still need people to operate the AI, but it's people who sell their voice. They will get a royalty of some kind, but then what happens when a real live job comes? Who's going to get it? You or the AI?
Yeah.
And I'm doing it myself.
Got it. That's where you draw the line. Okay, got it. Thanks for sharing your point of view. I'm just curious, you know, the moment you mentioned, because it's happening and a lot of people are using it because that's where the business is turning its point. You know, it's 2024. There's a shift in the industry. That's where I want to know what you think. And thank you for sharing your point of view.
Well, a lot of people are using it, but then they come back and say, actually, no, I'd rather have the human voice.
Yeah, I mean, that is very true. I've experienced that. I've seen people talking about, hey, there's this line, you know, you can see AI, but it's not AI. And not, I'm not talking about voiceovers. I'm talking about videos. I'm talking about there's not just voiceovers. There's a human actually saying those lines. So I've seen that. I'm in the marketing industry. So I've seen people talking about there's a human touch that is necessary to any kind of video or any kind of audio. Without that, it is good in percentage. It's very good in percentage, not in like fuller pot, but it's good in percentage, not like 100%, 5-6%, it's good.
Yeah. I mean, it's very good as a medium for everybody, because I can use AI. I could get ChatGPT to write something for me very quickly. Yeah. So that's a bonus. But when it comes to voice, that's just something that, but when it comes to voice, it's a human thing that people want.
That's professional.
And it's most important that humanity stays together, that we are good and kind to each other, and we touch and keep in touch with each other rather than having a machine doing everything.
Got it. Thank you so much for sharing your point of view. Now, here's the thing. What are your upcoming projects and what are you excited about in the coming time? Can you give us a sneak peek about that? What's coming up for Margaret Ashley?
There's a few things coming up, a lot of which I can't tell you about because I signed NDA.
Don't do that. Don't do that. Because last time someone did, and then they called me 2-3 times. Hey, I'll get sued if you released.
It's
something that you can share.
Yeah, I did an audio drama last year. That's coming out in sometime this month. I did. I'm about to do a continuing web series, drama web series, which is about vampires.
Oh, wow.
It's not giving anything away. It's just I will be playing a part in a continuing web series, and it's about vampires. I'm booked to do a game with Side Global in March, which I can't tell you anything about because I've signed an NDA.
Well, this is a new way of telling things.
This is the problem. Video games take such a long time to produce. They can take 4 or 5 years to do. And you've done it. And you can't say anything about it until it comes out. And then you're given permission.
So the projects that you did, like 2-3 projects I saw of you on your website, it took 4 or 5 years to
Some take 2 or 3 years. Some are quite quick, but video games take a long, long time.
How much of your part is in that whole 4 or 5 years? You're done with like within 3-4 months, or you still have to, you know, be
sometimes,
a part of it?
Sometimes you might just be there for a day or 2 or 3 days or 2 or 3 days over a few months. But then it's like a film. It takes months and months to do.
Yeah.
But with a video game, it takes years to do because you've got to start it. You've got to design it. You've got to get all your animators in. People. I mean,
there's a lot of things involved.
One particular video game that I did, I was in studio in the West End. And I was one of the writers was in France, and he was on the line over to us. And there was some other people who were all in France. And they had done the mocap, which is the people, actors, pretending to be the characters in the game. They'd recorded that in France. And then they were having the voiceover done in England.
Okay.
At a different studio by different people. And then they had the people doing the artwork elsewhere and the writers elsewhere. Oh. And they all have to. One of the wonderful things about video game is the artwork. You see such beautiful artistry done by people, and it takes them a long time to do that.
Yeah, it needs time. It needs time to do it properly. You know, if they want to launch it and earn a proper business from that particular thing, then they do testing as well.
They do beta testing. Games, things can go wrong. And so then they have to redo things.
Yeah. So I guess there's a lot of time in the beta testing also, a very long time, just to know that if there's anything wrong happening in between the game. Okay, got it. This is the new thing that I learned, like 4 or 5 years, man. But I came to know, like, good things are happening. There's a vampire series. Then there's a
I'm a vampire or not.
Yeah. But there's something that's good, and that there's video game. That's something that's what you're doing from last few years is the thing. But it's new production. It's new production house that's approaching you to do the thing and be a part of. So yeah, I guess it's really good. And let me know when it's released. I'll be happy to share the news, you know, on my social media and channels and in the stories. So just ping me a message, you know, just ping me, hey, this is coming. Just let me know. And I can interview you on that particular project if that's, that's possible. But yeah, and that's it, I guess. Thank you for sharing. Whenever it comes, to just drop a link on my messenger. Now, here's the thing. Throughout this 40 plus experience of your experience in this industry, you started really, you know, as a kid also, what I can say now, you were very passionate. You went on to places just to get into drama school. You traveled for hours to just to audition, and then you caught it. Now, that's different. One is passionate. One is really hardworking, but they're not up to mark. You are the one who are up to mark, who just unlocked 4 drama schools but didn't get into it just because there was no crack. Then you really hustled around for 1 month, I guess, in the holidays of yours, where you actually went to a place where it was possible. And that's where you unlocked the new drama school where, you know, with time you got the grant, but you slept on the floors. And then you made sure that whole weeks were not sleeping on a bed was not an issue for you. You could sleep on sofa, on floor. That was not the issue. The passion for this thing. And then, you know, you had a talent. And then you going on before, you know, becoming something. This is really rare to see in any individual. Like, just to be that passionate when you have no idea you're going to be that. You know, someone can be professional but cannot get a job in this field. They have to be very, very hardworking and approach and knock all doors till they get 3 seconds on the screen. That's the reality of this industry. You went for it all in without thinking of all these kind of things, you know. You never thought of this kind. You just were passionate and you went in, you got it, you were talented, you went for this thing, and 40 years still in 2024 to talking a guy from India and with the same passion here. And you...
That's technology for you.
Yeah, you are still energetic and still, you know, fresh with mind and all kind of things that you're teaching me some of the things. I learned a lot of things from you. A point of view, how you prepare. I'm going to use some of your exercises when I do some kind of things. But this is inspirational. Someone like you to be in this industry is really inspirational to have around. And people get, I got blessed to have you just by a phone call, and you showed interest. Hey, I'd like to be a part of the project. And anyone who is doing work with you are blessed to have a voice like you in their projects. Now, in this whole journey, what advice you'd like to give someone who's starting in 2024, someone who's young and starting in this industry as a voice actor or as an actress or as an actor, what advice you'd like to share?
Probably the same as was given to me and which I wasn't happy to receive. It's not easy. It is not a glamorous profession. It is hard work. You will not always be working. You will have lots of time. I mean, in between times, I did all sorts of jobs that I didn't want to do, but I had to just to stay alive. The main thing is to succeed is to get training.
Yeah.
You have to train, whether that's going to drama school, joining youth theatres, joining amateur dramatic groups, going to improvisation groups, joining online classes. There's so much on the internet that you can join, but there's also a lot on the internet that you want to be careful is not scammed. There are people who say they are coaches, and I wouldn't go to them. But I mean, I don't need to because I'm trained. But the main thing is you have to train. It's not a instant win. It's a long, hard road. People might say, oh, you've got a wonderful voice. You should do voiceover. It's not just a wonderful voice. You need to know how to use your equipment. You need to know how to understand a script. You need to know how to sell a script. You need to know how to fit a script into the 30 seconds or whatever it is that you need to fit it into. You need to know how to understand a character. So the advice is get training, work hard, meet people, network with people, do as much as you possibly can. And you have to have a proper studio. You have to have a room that is acoustically treated because, as I said, a microphone picks up the slightest thing. And if you want to be taken professionally, you need to have professional equipment, know how to use it and work with it, and know how to run a business. Voiceover is a business. I am a solo entrepreneur. I have to run a business. The smallest part of my time is acting or voice acting. The rest of it is marketing and writing and accounts and meeting people and networking. Yeah. It's a business, and you need to train to be in the business, and you need to work hard to get there.
Correct.
So that's get training.
Yeah, get trained. That's the first, that's the place where you begin with. And then decide, then you train yourself to be a part of this business. Learn that this is the business. It's not just the fancy thing that you see from outside. Okay, I'd like to do voiceover.
And have like something to fall back on. Whether you're a virtual assistant or working in a bar or working in an office, you need to have another something. Thing that you can rely on.
You need to have that part where, you know, even the job, even something that earns you money, you know, that gets you money, that fills your the monthly revenue, what you call, you get the groceries, you get the food, you get the clothes, you get the rent, everything is sorted. Then you, all you need to do is sort these things out. Then you can, you know, do it the proper way, because this is a creative field. It requires time. Some other things that in this creative industry where you need to give time. You can't just say that, hey, I have 4 hours in the day and I want to make it. No, it needs time. It needs at least 20 hours to, you know, get that whole thing, you know, glow, like what do we say? I can see that it's glowing, but it needs 20 hours. So to have that time, you need to have something where you need to fall on any job that you can do, anything which will help you, you know, survive this field, so you can act more creatively in that other part, the other life that you would look to have.
I mean, for example, I suppose you do this podcast. It must have taken you considerable weeks to prepare to set up a podcast to start running.
Yeah. I mean, like, this was by chance, by the way, but this is the fourth year in this whole business. Now I'm talking to you to get something, you know, have international actors on the board and get them to do an audio drama. I started by myself, but yeah, it was like 4 years back. I was an artist. I was an actor. I was doing theater and drama and all. Then the COVID happened. That's where I started doing this as a voice exercise. And then the way you told me, like, hey, this is a marketing part also. That's where 2 years I focused on marketing. Then after years, I got authors as sponsor. But then I got into marketing. That's where I started revenue and all. And then I can properly focus on projects where, you know, only creative people get on board, like you. And I can do these interviews and get their stories, you know, just to run this podcast. So, you know, just give the creative time. So, yeah, that's it. Thank you. Thank you so much, Margaret. Thank you for sharing the wonderful advice, your wonderful journey. The moment you started, I really thought, like, this question is not going to work with her. I need something new, impromptu things where I can, you know, really get into her journey, because this is really first time I heard any artist, any actor sharing this kind of journey on the interview. You know, this is wonderful. I had a great time working with you on The Knights of Avalon. It got released and it's there. I'm going to link it down. I'm also going to link all the social media and the website that you have, so people can contact you and get in touch with you. So make sure you go and check the description to get in contact with voice actress, award-winning voice actress, Margaret Ashley. And then you can connect with her via mostly she's active via her phone and website, I guess, and email. Social
from
media,
website,
I guess
she's not, via LinkedIn.
Yeah. Instagram, I guess she's not that active. I don't know.
I'm on Instagram, but...
You are on, but that's not the way. That's not, I think, from my side, is the perfect way to connect with her. But mail, call, website, email, contact us, whatever you have. She's very on the go, where she can communicate immediately. That's the thing I can say. Yeah. And everything will be mentioned in the description, so you can connect with her. You can also find her on our featured artist page on our website, where you can, you know, type Margaret Ashley and then you can connect. Thank you so much, Margaret. Thank you for your time. Thank you for being available, because I guess this is 12:30. You just say that the best
it's
possible
not time.
Oh, yeah. And that's the best possible for you. But I guess we made it happen, and you made your interview session. This is really wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure talking to you. I think you can go to bed now.
No, it's 7 for me. It's 7 p.m. for me. So it's like regular office where the office ends. That's the time for me now. So I can just now leave the office.
Right, I'm going to go and have my lunch.
Okay, yeah. So hey,
lovely
everyone.
Speaking to you.
Same here. So I'll just end the show with this note, like, hey, everyone, I am Ajay Tambe, the host and producer of this show, and now I'm signing off.